OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Toledot. And this Shabbat is not only Parshat Toledot, it is also known as Machar Chodesh, meaning Rosh Chodesh Kislev is Motzoi Shabbat, Saturday night, Sunday. And the Haftorah of Toledot is preempted by a special Haftarah for Machar Chodesh. And because Rosh Chodesh is coming, we bench Rosh Chodesh as well. And that has an interesting twist. In any event, let's start the way we usually do. Recording and first broadcast Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 27th of Mar Cheshvan, 5772. And on the secular calendar, November 24th, known in the United States and for in the hearts of all immigrants from the United States as Thanksgiving. So, without further ado, Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed, and then we'll talk. Shir Hama'alot Mima Amakim Kraticha Adonai. Adonai Shema V'Koli Tihyena Oznecha Kashuvot L'Kol Tachanunai Im Avonot Tishmor Ya Adonai Miya Amod Ki Imacha Hasalicha L'Ma'an Tivare Ki Viti Adonai Kiveta Nafshi V'Lidvoro Hocholti Nafshi L'Adonai Mi Shomerim L'Boker Shomerim L'Boker Yachel Yisrael El Adonai Ki Im Adonai HaChesed V'Harbe Imo Fedut V'hu yifdeh et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara v'ashivya ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha ha'makom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara lirvacha u'me'afela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula hashta ba'agala u'vizman kariv v'nomar amen. Speaking of those in captivity, Jonathan Pollard, as of today, has been in prison for 9,499 days. One day short of 9,500. Way, way too long. I will just say, check out www.jonathanpollard.com. One word, .org, O-R-G. That's the English version of the website for Free Jonathan Pollard. And look at the fact sheet. Over 50 points, not presented passionately, presented factually, and they come together as a horror story and very serious condemnation of the way the United States has treated Jonathan Pollard and Israel as well. Okay, to the good news. As those who already read or received a copy of this week's hard copy Torah Tidbits, number 978, I took the opportunity of writing the lead tidbit, calling it the grandparent factor. And I shall quote, pardon my getting personal, I do this every so often, and this time it is in honor of the birth of a grandson less than 10 hours ago as of this writing. Now I have to say it's 3 days ago as of now. The baby is 3 days old, and he was born to my daughter Ora and her husband Noam and the big brother Elad, who celebrated his birthday, second birthday, on the same day that his new brother was born. So we have nice news for the family. Okay, I mentioned that this Shabbat is Rosh Chodesh benching. Let's talk about that first, because you have an interesting phenomenon. Generally, the way Ashkenazim announce Rosh Chodesh and bless it is on the Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh. They say an introductory paragraph, which contains the blessing itself. May this month coming up be a month of life and a month of health and a month of honor, etc., etc. And then the tradition is a gabbai announces the molad. The molad is the birth of the new moon, the instant that the moon is between the earth and the sun, which marks, in one sense, the beginning of the Jewish month. It does not always coincide with Rosh Chodesh. And this particular month, we have an interesting phenomenon. Usually, the announcement is, the molad will be, and they name the day, the hour, the minute, and the fraction of a minute. This time, on Shabbat morning, the announcement, if it's done properly, will be Hamolad Haya, Etmol, Beleil Shabbat Kodesh. The Molad was last night, Friday night, at 36 minutes and 16 parts of a minute. There are 18 parts to a minute, after 6. So it is kind of rare, not extremely rare, but kind of rare, that when we bench Rosh Chodesh, we announce a Molad that already happened. But that's the way the calendar works sometimes, and those who make the announcement this Shabbat should be aware of the fact that they have to say Haya was. Okay, that said, Rosh Chodesh is Motzoi Shabbat, as I mentioned, which means Shabbat, as its ending already, begins Rosh Chodesh, and there is an interesting halachic situation, which I like to talk about. I don't know if I will spend a lot of time on it, but let's take a quick look at it. General question. Su'uda Shlishit, the third Shabbat meal, very often is eaten late in the afternoon and sometimes goes into the night, especially when people have guests and they're singing and Divrei Torah and conversation at the table. And it could happen that it continues to dark. When it gets dark, it's already Rosh Chodesh Kislev, which is Saturday night, Sunday. Not having said Havdalah, or even the words of Havdalah, and not having davened Arvit, it is still Shabbat. Which captures the addition to Birkat HaMazon. When you bench for the meal, when you say Birkat HaMazon, do you say Retzei, because this was a Shabbat meal, and the fact that it's continued into the night shouldn't change the fact that it's a Shabbat meal. You still should acknowledge Shabbat by saying Retzei. Or do you say Ya'aleh V'Yavo, because now it's Rosh Chodesh, and now is when you're saying Birkat HaMazon, and now it should be appropriate to acknowledge the fact that it is Rosh Chodesh? Or do you say them both, because the meal started on Shabbat, and when it became Rosh Chodesh, that added a sanctity to the Shabbat, and both should be included? It happens to be a three-way dispute, because one opinion says you do in Birkat HaMazon based on when the meal started. Another opinion says you do in Birkat HaMazon when the meal ended. Period. End of story. The other opinion says you blend the two and you say them both, the Shabbat part and the Rosh Chodesh part. And the other two object because that has an internal contradiction. When you say Retzei for Shabbat and Ya'aleh V'Yavo for Rosh Chodesh, you are saying it's Shabbat Rosh Chodesh, and it's not this month. There are months where Shabbat coincides with Rosh Chodesh, or vice versa. This month, Rosh Chodesh follows the Shabbat. So the objection to that third opinion is, you're saying Shabbat and Rosh Chodesh in the same Birkat HaMazon. That's not accurate to the fact that there is no Shabbat Rosh Chodesh this month. That opinion says, no, it describes an overlap of sanctity, and it does not necessarily mean that today is Shabbat Rosh Chodesh. It could mean that as Shabbat is ending, the sanctity of Rosh Chodesh overlaps a little bit, and you're acknowledging both. Intriguing dispute. When it comes to a situation, the intrigue is not enough. You need a definitive psak halacha. So the psak halacha works like this. If you started the Shabbat, third Shabbat meal before sunset, including the eating of bread, challah, whatever, then no matter how long the meal continues into the night, as long as you haven't davened ma'ariv or said words of havdalah, you say just ritzeh, because that's what this meal started as, and you do not add ya'alev yavo. That's the halacha. However, if you started late and it was already after dark before you started, which you shouldn't, but if you did, and you ate the challah at the beginning of the meal, mostly we'll say after dark, then you say just yalev yavo and not ritzeh. And if you're not sure if you ate a significant amount of challah before dark or not, then you would say them both, which means that a present day posek, and it happens to be Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zichrono Livracha, so we can't call him a present day authority, but certainly within this generation or the previous one, he says we're following one opinion, but we're going to acknowledge the existence of the other two opinions in certain circumstances. A concluding statement is, rather than put yourself into a situation where there's a dispute and you have to choose one authority over another to know what to do, it is best to avoid the problem, avoid the situation, which means on Shabbat, that is followed at nighttime by Rosh Chodesh, eat your Sudah Shlishit early enough and finish it before dark, even if you usually would extend it further. Because then you clear to say just ritzeh, and nobody stands against that with other opinions, even if we don't follow. I hope that those who are listening to these words understand that I'm not just saying this for this specific situation. There is a general desirability to avoid, if possible, dispute in Jewish law. When you're in a situation where the law is disputed, you need psak halacha, a definitive, authoritative ruling. But it is very often, and I shouldn't say always, it's not, but it is very often desirable not to enter into the question mark kind of situation where you have to choose one opinion over the other. That was maybe too wide sweeping a statement, but take it for what it's worth, and the interest of the Dvar Torah and Dvar Halacha, which is usable, and you're welcome to use it, this Shabbat afternoon at Seudah Shlishit. It's like a natural topic to talk about. On that note, let us hear the song Yehi HaChodesh Hazeh. I've played it in the past in different versions. This one is Shlomi Dax, and it's a blessing for a good month that is contained in the Motzoi Shabbat, the Saturday night prayers, or Zmirot, and I've always found that combination interesting. And this overlap sort of indicates this is a song we should be playing, Yehi HaChodesh Hazeh. Remember also that it comes from Motzoi Shabbat, and Motzoi Shabbat has a special connection to this week's Sedra of V'yiten Lecha, which we will talk about later. In the meantime, Shleimi Dax with Yehi HaChodesh Hazeh. Okay, to Parshat Toledot, let's take a peek back at the end of Chayei Sarah. At the end of Chayei Sarah, Rivka, the future Rivka Imenu, our mother Rebecca, is introduced and loved by Yitzchak, and they marry. And in the beginning of Toledot, it records that this is the story of the generations of the offspring of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. Avraham, the one who sired Yitzchak. Yitzchak was 40 years old when he took Rivka as a wife. Exactly how old Rivka was at the time is debated by commentaries. We won't mention that because the Torah doesn't. And it does give Rivka's lineage as the daughter of Betuel, the Aramite from Padan Aram, Avraham's hometown, the sister of Lavan Ha'arami, and then it indicates that they were not able to have children for a while, a period of 20 years actually. And the Torah says they prayed, and finally Rivka became pregnant. But, Vayitrotzetzu habanim bekirba, the children agitated within her. I'm reading the Stone Edition translation. And she was so stricken by the turmoil within her that she said, Imkein lamaza anochi, if that's the case, what is all this to me? Vatelech lidrosh et Hashem. She went to consult with God. Exactly what that means, or to inquire of God. Exactly what that means is also disputed among authorities, but the answer that she got was, you're carrying twins, and they will each be the progenitors of great nations, and there will be clashes between them. At the end of her term, she gave birth to twins. The first one that was born was reddish, and that was Esav, and the second one was Yaakov. I don't know if we want to get into the whole description there. Some of you know it, and some of you can find it out otherwise. But there were clashes between the sons, and projected for the future. And we have an encounter early at this point between Esav and Yaakov, when on the day, according to our tradition, the day that Avraham Avinu passed away, Yaakov was preparing a lentil dish for his father. It's a traditional mourner's food. On that day, Esav comes back from the field exhausted, asks for some of the lentil mixture, nizid adashim, and Yaakov, at least according to the way the verses present themselves, acquires the birthright which Esav disparaged and said, what do I need it for? You want it? I'd rather have the soup. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Toledot. And after I finished the first half, I realized that I didn't begin it with a theme song, like I've been doing the last couple of weeks, that I didn't begin it with the reading of the first verse of the Parsha, which I've been doing for a lot more than the last few weeks. So I apologize for that. If you like these theme songs, you just heard one. And we're piling up our commitments for CDs for those who send in by email to tt@ou.org the correct identification of the theme music. And here is the opening of Parshat Toledot, which we've already started talking about. Ve'ele Toledot Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham holid et Yitzchak. That's it. Okay, so where were we? We're talking, now, I have to give an introduction. I am sure in past years, on Toledot specifically, I have told the following story, and the point could be made in many, many portions of the Torah, but somehow, it always, Toledot always triggers it in me. I had a classmate way back in elementary school, who felt that our sages gave dear Uncle Esav, Yaakov's twin brother, a hard deal, a raw deal. They describe him as being wicked, and they attribute all kind of nasty things to him. I'll give you an example in a moment. And if you read the verses in the Torah, he comes out more as a victim of the scheming younger twin, Yaakov, who steals the birthright from him and steals the blessing from Yitzchak later. And there should be, this is what my friend used to challenge the teachers, more sympathy for Esav. I would like to, I said I'd give you the example, and then I'll tell you how I understand it and how very important I believe it is to understand it that way. Vayavo Esav min hasadeh v'hu ayef. Esav returns from the field and he is tired. That, in its straight, plain reading, is simply a description of a guy that spent the day out in the field. Whatever he was doing, it exhausted him, and he comes back home after a tiring day on the job. And if it were not for the Talmud's statement about what happened on that day, we would leave it the way it sounds, and it's plain and simple. The Talmud says on that very day, as I mentioned earlier, the day that Avraham Avinu passed away and Yitzchak was mourning his father, on that very day, Esav turned from being a nice kid to showing his true colors of wickedness and committed 5 very serious sins on that day. The Gemara continues by analyzing the words in the verse and gives a very sinister meaning to the word field, sadeh, and a sinister meaning to the word ayef and other parts of that verse and the other verses there. So when you read a verse that says Esav returned from the field and he was tired, and you reread it as Esav returned from having committed murder and rape and idolatry and other things like that, it's very different, and the reader of the Bible will scratch his head and said, where do you get that from? And the answer is, you get it from the Talmud, but that's not enough of an explanation. The Talmud is the embodiment of the oral Torah. The oral Torah is an inseparable partner with the written word. We have Torah shebichtav and Torah shebaal peh. We are not capable, no one is capable, of truly understanding the Torah without both. This, as I have often said, was the mistake of the rest of the world, and unfortunately of some Jews as well. The world said, give us that Bible, translate it into a language we can understand, Greek, from there to Latin, from there to every language imaginable, where the Bible has been translated into more languages than any other book, including Harry Potter. And I don't know if we asked, but we said, but that's only part of it, and they rejected, the world rejected the oral law and the oral Torah. In fact, there were periods in the dark times of the Middle Ages and later that the non-Jewish world wanted to destroy the Talmud, collecting manuscripts and burning them, because they had the Bible. And we still have a difficult time convincing the rest of the world that they don't have anywhere near an accurate presentation of the Word of God because they don't have the oral Torah. So I don't believe that you can take the word sadeh in this context and find it in a different context in the Torah, where it involves rape, and say it means Esav raped. That wouldn't be fair. That would be a hatchet job. That was the word I was looking for before. That would be a hatchet job on Esav. No. The oral law, the oral Torah, that which is transmitted generation to generation from God to Moshe through the generations, says that Esav displayed his wicked behavior on the very day that Avraham Avinu died. That is as true as the words in the written Torah. If you don't believe that, then you got a problem understanding what I'm talking about. And you have a problem with a lot of other things as well. The written word is purposely not only succinct, but sometimes missing many of the details that are fleshed out in the oral law, the oral tradition, the oral Torah, Torah Sheba'al Peh. So the simple answer, but it's a very general answer and a very important answer to my friend, is our sages were not doing a hatchet job on Esav. Fact that Esav was a wicked person. Fact that Yishmael had been wicked and did teshuvah, repented in his later years. These are truths of the Torah, the whole Torah, which consists of the written word and the oral tradition. I don't know if that's enough to be said, but that's all I'm going to say at this moment. It's really a much wider discussion and many, many examples. I'll just use one or two of my favorite examples. Take your index finger. Put the tip of your index finger, either hand, right or left, will do. Put it between your eyes. I would imagine anyone who followed my request now has his fingertip on the bridge of his nose, literally between his eyes. The Torah uses the expression as to where the tefillin of the head is supposed to be placed, bein einecha. You look it up in a dictionary, you go to Ulpan and you learn a little bit of Hebrew, and bein einecha means between your eyes. But it does not mean the bridge of your nose. It means on your head, towards the front, in the center. If you were to put your hand vertical and run your finger up your nose between your eyes and up to your hairline, that's where the tefillin would be placed. Why does the Torah use the term bein einecha and potentially confuse people? It's not confusing if you have a written word and an oral Torah, because the oral Torah explains what bein einecha means. An eye for an eye. Never ever think that the Torah is saying that if a person injures someone's eyes, you pluck out the perpetrator's eye. God forbid. That's not what it means. It means that there's a very complex set of guidelines for monetary compensation for injuries, which include medical bills and lost earning power and time and embarrassment and a whole bunch of other things. But it does not mean that you injure a person's eye if he caused an eye injury to someone else. That would be a gross distortion of what the Torah says. Because what it says is not the whole thing. The whole thing is a combination of the written word and the oral Torah. I said before that this is not just a toledot issue, but it is triggered in my own mind by my friend who not only went to elementary school with me, but high school and college and graduate school, and we remain good friends. But he's the one that I think of because he was the one that expressed sympathy for dear Uncle Esav. And we would all have that sympathy if it were not from the presentation of the oral Torah that Esav was a truly wicked person. In fact, later on, when he realized he was not able to vanquish Yaakov, he instructed his son and his grandson to carry on this task because it is a well-known axiom of Jewish life that Esav hates Yaakov. This is borne out by some of the verses, and it is certainly borne out by the oral Torah. Maybe enough said, maybe not, but let's now put in a song so I don't run out of time later without it. The words to the song come from later in Parshat Toledot, the blessing that Yitzchak gives Yaakov, the one that we quote if we say that passage on Motzoi Shabbat, V'yiten lecha Elokim mital hashamayim u mishmanei ha'oretz, sorry for the flub there, v'rov dagan v'tirosh in English, and may God give you of the dew of the heavens and of the fatness of the earth and abundant grain and wine. This is a blessing for physical well-being and sustenance and prosperity. It goes along with a blessing for spiritual well-being, and that we could talk about a little as well, but this is V'yiten Lecha, and then we'll continue with the Sedra.
Oh,
Let me get to a particularly difficult idea in the Parsha to understand. Yitzchak, blind in old age, sends his son Esav to hunt and to catch food that he likes and prepare him the dish so that he will eat and be able to bless Esav. Rivka, mother of both Yaakov and Esav, overhears this and says to Yaakov, get me two goats from my flock, and I will prepare dishes that your father likes, and you will bring them to him instead of Esav, so that you will get the blessing that God wants you to have. Yaakov hesitates, and he said, maybe my father will realize that I am deceiving him, and he'll curse me instead of bless. Rivka says, upon me shall be that curse if that happens. Do as I say. And she puts hairy skins on his arms and on his neck and gives him Esav's special coat and prepares these dishes, and Yaakov brings them and receives the blessing. Basically, Yaakov, according to our tradition, received the blessing that he should have gotten, that Yitzchak contemplated giving to Esav instead. Yaakov got the blessing, and according to some, Rivka was not the schemer here, but it was instructed to her to do this by God. And the deception was a necessary vehicle of Yaakov's getting this bracha rather than Esav. Years later, Yaakov's sons deceive him, and they use a goat, slaughter the goat, smear its blood on the coat of many colors that Yaakov gives to Yosef, and they say to him, take a look at this. A wild animal must have attacked and killed Yosef, when they had not done that, but they had sold him into Egyptian slavery instead. The sons of Yaakov deceive him with a goat and a coat, just like Yaakov deceived his father with the meat of goat and the coat of Esav. It is clear that Yaakov suffered a punishment measure for measure because of that deception, and he even says to Paro when he meets him, how old am I? 130 tough, bad years, and I'll never make the longevity of my father and grandfather. And yet, Rivka was the one who instructed Yaakov what to do, and as I said before, according to some opinions, this was divinely inspired because it was meant to be. How could that be, that Yaakov, in essence, is punished measure for measure for deceiving Yitzchak when he was supposed to deceive Yitzchak in order to receive a blessing? Very hard to understand. The closest I got to understanding it is an analogy to medication and treatment. There are certain very serious diseases that are treated with very difficult procedures and medications, which have very negative side effects. Yet, they have to be done, because the life of the person is at stake. Why is it like this in the world? I don't know. I always believe that God knows what he's doing, and he doesn't tell us all the time what he's doing. So he's got the infinite grasp of everything. We have a finite, limited understanding. I don't know how to explain it, but I believe it. I feel it. I know it. There's more, but I'm going to have to suffice it by wishing you all a Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov, Lehishtameah.